This is the one-stop FPL podcast. Hello and welcome back to another episode of One-Stop FPL with me, your host, Andy Johnson. And we are back. Game week one is done and dusted. And it didn't take long for us to feel all of the emotions in just one game week that every FPL manager goes through throughout the season. We had some highs, some lows, some transfer news, injury woes, and now a few transfer dilemmas for our squads to deal with. So let's get into it. All right then, so some initial reactions to game week one. The curtain raiser, Manchester United beat Fulham 1-0. That was a Xerxes goal. So interesting, he didn't start, but he came off the bench and the new boy got the job done for Manchester United in the end. There were certainly a lot more owners of Fulham assets when it comes to FPL. So a bit frustrating for the likes of Emil Smith-Rowe, Muniz, Anthony Robinson. But it's just the first week. Liverpool beating Ipswich 2-0, not particularly surprising, although it did take them a little while to break them down. A pretty decent first half from Ipswich, who were well organised and made life a bit difficult for the first 45. And then, really interestingly, Quansah, the Liverpool centre-back, came off at half-time. Arne Slot said afterwards that was a tactical decision, so no injury there. So that will be slightly problematic, it would seem, for Quansah owners. Konate winning those aerial duels in the second half helped Liverpool onto that 2-0 victory. Goals for each of Mo Salah and Diogo Jota. Salah also picked up an assist, as did Szoboszlai, who's playing a little further forward, it would seem, this season in that Liverpool side. And it will be interesting just to keep an eye on Diogo Jota's minutes, because his expected goal involvement throughout his time at Liverpool has been incredible when you look at it per 90 minutes. His problem has been not being able to hold down a regular starting place in that Liverpool 11 under Klopp. He was frequently used from the bench and there was a little bit of rotation between him, Gakpo and Darwin Nunez last season. So it will be interesting, because I do think that if Jota can hold down that starting spot under Arne Slot, then I think 7.5 could be the bargain of the game for this season. 7.5 million for Diogo Jota, if he keeps delivering like we know he can when he's on the pitch, could be sensational value. Moving on to Arsenal versus Wolves. Goal and an assist for each of Kai Havertz and Bukayo Saka. A fairly routine win for Arsenal. And it was interesting to see Havertz rising in price as well. He's becoming increasingly popular. And I was quite surprised, actually, given that he is a forward that costs 8 million in the game this season. With so much competition in those forward areas, it's interesting to see how popular Havertz is, especially as well given Arsenal's defensive record. So the popularity of defensive assets like the keeper and Saliba and Gabriel, but also Saka. So it's good to see that there are other players who are particularly important other than the obvious picks at Arsenal. Moving on, we had a massive win for Brighton away at Everton. Bit of a disaster from Everton. Goals for Brighton came from Adingra, Matoma and Welbeck. Welbeck also picking up an assist. And there were assists for a couple of the new boys at Brighton, Mats Wiefer and Minta. And I think Minta in particular, Sean, he looked really impressive. Slightly frustrating to see him come off just before halftime with a concussion injury, because he was looking really, really dangerous before that. I believe we've had confirmation that he is fit to play for game week two. So that'll be good to see as well. Newcastle with a 1-0 victory over Southampton. And I think one of the most popular captaincy candidates for game week one was Isak, who picked up an assist. So he didn't blank, thankfully, and he was my captain for game week one. But he certainly won't be thanking Fabian Schär, who got himself sent off with a pretty stupid clash of heads or a headbutt, or one of those things where two players just lean their heads into one another. And Brereton Diaz was smart enough to drop like a sack of spuds quicker. And that certainly meant that Schär came across like the aggressor and picked up the red card. So Schär will have a three-match ban for violent conduct. So that isn't good for owners of Fabian Schär. It also wasn't good in terms of Newcastle's attacking prospects for that game, because obviously after the goal and after the red card, I should say, they basically just had to try and protect that 1-0 lead, which they managed to do pretty effectively, which does say a lot about their defensive capabilities, although I think it might actually just say more about the lack of cutting edge up front for Southampton. It's also just worth mentioning that Newcastle defensive options, like the likes of Lewis Hall, Dan Byrne, should be fairly nailed for minutes in the short term, given that Schär is suspended as well. Nottingham Forest and Bournemouth drew 1-1. Chris Wood, a very popular pick from some of the slightly cheaper forward options at 6 million. He got himself his first goal of the season. West Ham 1, Aston Villa 2. Pakatar getting West Ham's goal. Souček with the assist. And Duran and Onana with goals for Aston Villa. Ramsey and Tielemans with the assist. And no returns, but a promising display at the very least from Rodgers at Aston Villa, another popular FPL option as a fifth choice midfielder. Brentford managing to get the job done with a 2-1 victory over Crystal Palace. That was without Ivan Toney, who is attracting attention from Saudi Arabia, so there could be a transfer on the cards there. We did see last season that Brentford coped pretty well in the absence of Ivan Toney, with Mbeumo playing up front. And it was him and Wissa who got on the score sheet for Brentford. Wissa also picking up an assist. Crystal Palace's goal was actually an Ethan Pinnock own goal, although Munoz, a very popular defensive pick at Crystal Palace, picking up the assist. Manchester City got the job done away at Chelsea. Haaland, unsurprisingly, on the score sheet. And joining him was actually Kovacic, who probably actually gave the best performance from that match. Very impressive display from him. Bernardo Silva picking up an assist. Unfortunately, Haaland did get booked in that game, so that took some of the shine off anyone who chose to captain Erling Haaland. And finally, rounding off game week one, we had Leicester 1, Spurs 1. Such a strange game. Spurs absolutely dominating Leicester in the first half. And really, they should have been out of sight. And I think owners of players like Dominic Solanke will have been really, really frustrated that he didn't get a return for them. And we'll come on to Solanke in a little bit. But it was really, really promising to see players like James Maddison on the ball. Really, everything was going through him, and he looked back to near his best, certainly before his injury last season. Those opening sort of 12 games, he looked so, so dangerous for Spurs, and it did look like he could be a really, really good FPL pick this season. He picked up an assist. Pedro Porro, unsurprisingly, on the score sheet. We shouldn't be surprised to see Spurs fullbacks picking up goals and assists this season. They get into such dangerous positions high up the pitch under Ange Postecoglou. So expect to see more from them and Pedro Porro in particular, I think, this season. But that being said, they didn't convert enough of their chances, Tottenham, and they were punished in the second half. I think it's kind of same old Spurs when it comes to FPL. Whilst there are upsides on owning Spurs defence, you just know you can't rely on them for clean sheets. So it'll be interesting to see if that does change and it's addressed at some point throughout the season. Leicester got their goal through Jamie Vardy, a bit of a FPL veteran as well as a Premier League veteran, of course. And it was the new signing, Fatawu, who picked up the assist for that Leicester goal. Right then, what I'd like to do now is move on to a new section of the podcast that I'm calling Points versus Performance. And this is essentially something I'm going to do each week where I'll take a look at some of the highest FPL point scorers of the game week. And I'm going to take a slightly closer look at some of their performance data, things like their expected goal involvements, just to see if those players are overperforming or underperforming. And hopefully, as the season goes on and we get a greater sample size of data, then it'll be better informed as we make those decisions as to whether or not a player who's hot right now is likely to continue with that point scoring in FPL, or if actually there's just a lot of variance there and maybe the underlying data says maybe we steer clear. So with that in mind, let's take a look. And obviously, I know that this is just one game week's worth of data to go off. So you can take a lot of what I say, I suppose, with a pinch of salt. Nonetheless, we'll start, of course, at the very top of the point scoring for game week one. And that was Mo Salah. 14-point haul for him. That came from one goal, one assist. And that was actually from a expected goal involvement of 0.9. So as we would expect from Mo Salah, a bit of overperformance from him. Interestingly enough, second on the list with a 12-point return is Danny Welbeck. Now, this will be a slightly different story to Mo Salah. We know Welbeck isn't as strong a player as Salah, and his 12-point haul, which has come from one goal, one assist, was actually from an expected goal involvement total of 0.2. So a huge, huge overperformance there. Now, that's just one game week. If over the course of the next 6, 7, 8 weeks, we see that he is consistently outperforming his XGI, then I think we'd all be scrambling to get him into our teams. But we know that that's probably unlikely to be the case. And it just is much more likely to just be variance in just one single game week as to why Welbeck has so hugely outperformed his XGI. When you look also further down that list, you've got Havertz and Saka also actually delivering 12-point returns, both with a goal and an assist. And they delivered that from an XGI of 0.5 for Havertz and 0.7 for Saka. Now, those are two players who you would expect to more likely consistently outperform their expected goal involvements in terms of points returns in comparison to Welbeck. So in general, the better players are more likely to outperform their XGI. But it's useful data just to keep tabs on and see if there are emerging players that do seem to be consistently outperforming. And if the underlying data is good, then let's try not to sleep on it before they score a whole bunch of points that we're missing out on. Probably also just worth mentioning a couple of other strong point scorers from game week one. We saw Pedro Porro with a 9-point return. That came from his one goal came from an XG of 0.09. So it was a pretty impressive header, something that not too many players you would expect to see deliver. I think that what we will see more from Pedro Porro is shots from outside the box. And he certainly got the technical capability of delivering them. Now, he's not going to score loads and loads of goals, but he's also not going to take on too many of those chances. And when he does, and when he does score them, we'll see Pedro Porro as one of those players who I believe can consistently outperform his XGI. Also, quite an interesting thing that I've noticed is the difference between Brentford forwards Wissa and Mbeumo. Now, they both got on the score sheet, but Wissa's XG was 0.91. So he scored a goal that most players would finish. Whereas Brian Mbeumo, he scored his goal from an XG of 0.08. So again, you'll see the better players, and I think it's probably fair to say that Mbeumo is a better player than Wissa. These players will consistently outperform their XG. So let's take a look. It's also worth noting, of course, Ivan Toney's absence could mean that Mbeumo stays on penalties and will be the main focal point of attack for Brentford this season. Vardy, also now a player who in seasons gone by would have been one of those players that was consistently outperforming the XG, but he was given pretty much an absolute sitter from about 2 yards out. He put his header in, and that's why his XG of 0.8 was converted with his goal. Now, if we just slightly flip this on its head, and rather than looking at the points tally, we look at the highest expected goal involvement, we get a different set of players that are appearing at the top of the list. Now, what this will tell us is that these players are getting into really good goal-scoring positions or positions in which they are creating high, high scoring chances. So, top of the XGI from game week one, we have Thomas Souček at West Ham with a 1.2 XGI. Second, we've got Mitoma with 1.1, Bruno Fernandes with 1.1, and Trent Alexander-Arnold with 1.1. Madison and Diogo Jota also with an XGI of 1. So all of these, apart from Bruno Fernandes, picked up at least one assist. So really good to see some familiar FPL picks at the top of this list. And this is going to be particularly pertinent because if this XGI continues to stay this high, and what I'll do is I will set it to be per 90 minutes so that we can see on average what a player is delivering per match. The ones at the top that stay at the top consistently throughout the course of the season will tend to be the ones that end up getting the points. If they're not getting the points, then something is going seriously wrong because they're creating really good chances or they're putting themselves in really good goal scoring opportunities. And if they're not getting points from those, then they're players that just aren't able to convert, or they're players that should be getting more assists, but they're passing to players who are not converting their chances. I think a good example of that from the players that I've just listed at the top of the list at the moment is Bruno Fernandes, for example, who has an XGI of 1.1, but no returns, no goals, no assists. And that really must be down to the fact that the players up front weren't really delivering. They didn't have Højlund fit. Xerxes came on late and got the goal from a Garnacho assist in the end. But Bruno Fernandes is one of their main creative outlets, so you would expect him to be picking up goals and assists. He hasn't in the first game week, but I would expect his XGI to be high, and he'll be high up on this list. He should be anyway. So let's see if the points start to come. If they don't, then Bruno Fernandes might be one of those players we have to start thinking about avoiding. And that is how we will allow this data to better inform our decision making. Right then, let's move on to some important information ahead of game week two that we must take into consideration. And that is injury news, transfer news, and some price changes. So a couple of key things that I think are worth mentioning. The first is that Kwanzaa at Liverpool. Right then, time now to move on to some key info ahead of game week two. And that is, of course, any injury news, transfer news, and also some price changes that I think are worth noting. So the first is Liverpool's Kwanzaa, the centre-back who was substituted at half-time. That's actually resulted in quite a few owners immediately selling. So that knee-jerk reaction has resulted in a price drop for Kwanzaa, who's dropped now down to 4.4. It's also worth noting that he missed training on Wednesday with a bit of an injury. So it's worth keeping an eye on that one. Barco, the most popular 4 million defender in the game for game week one. So many high hopes for him ahead of that first deadline. But not only did he not even feature for a single minute of Brighton's 3-0 victory, but unfortunately the left back has now gone to sunny Seville. He has taken a season-long loan in Spain. So Barco owners, of which I am one, we may need to start thinking about a replacement for him before his price drops, which I think is probably quite likely given how popular he is or was. Also, a couple of transfer news. We've got Joachim Anderson, who's gone from Palace to Fulham. And it also looks like Nketiah is getting his move to Nottingham Forest. Chelsea have signed João Felix. And Gundogan is back at Manchester City. Felix and Gundogan, both midfielders, both 6.5 million. So really interesting to see a couple of high differentials who may be worth considering for game week two. Certainly Manchester City with their game against Ipswich could be a really interesting one. Pep, I'm sure, would have no qualms with putting Gundogan straight into his starting lineup. A player, obviously, he knows really well and knows the Manchester City system and way of playing really well. So I'm sure he could seamlessly fit in straight away. It's also just worth mentioning that there is a 4 million defender who has made a move from Liverpool to Brentford, and that is Van der Berg. So maybe, actually, there could be an alternative to Barco there. There is, however, one very important piece of information that will impact almost a quarter of FPL managers, and that is the news that Dominic Solanke, the new centre-forward at Spurs, who signed in the summer for £65 million from Bournemouth, has picked up an injury. So really bad news for Solanke owners. Postecoglou, in his pre-match press conference ahead of their game against Everton, has confirmed that he actually picked up a knock fairly early on in the game against Leicester, managed to play on through it and get the full 90 minutes. However, the following day, the ankle injury did flare up slightly, and so he will not feature in that game against Everton. He did say it wasn't too serious, but Postecoglou did also say that they had the international break as well. So that could potentially mean that he misses game weeks 2 and 3. So I do think that if you are a Solanke owner, I think you do have to seriously consider selling, especially given that game week 3, Spurs have Newcastle, game week 4, they've got Arsenal, and it's not an easy run of fixtures there. So it's a shame, because Solanke owners will have hoped that he hit the ground running with those first two fixtures looking so appetizing, Leicester and Everton. But unfortunately, that is no longer an option, and we need to start thinking about replacements. Which brings me nicely onto the next section of the podcast, Game Week 2 Transfers. So let's first take a look at a few potential Dominic Solanke replacements. First up, and he's probably going to be difficult to afford, but game week one did show a lot of promise for Kai Havertz. So he's 8.1, which means he's actually 0.6 more than Dominic Solanke. So even if you kept £500,000 left in the bank from your game week one team, you're probably not going to be able to afford Kai Havertz, as he has risen in price this week. The other thing that slightly puts me off Havertz in the short term is the fixtures. He's away at Villa next week. Then he has a home fixture against Brighton, which isn't too bad. But then it's Spurs away and City away. So three away from the next four, and difficult fixtures. So Kai Havertz, promising first game week, but short term fixtures are a little challenging. From game week 6 onwards, it does look really good for Arsenal. So they've got Leicester at home and Southampton at home, and then Bournemouth away. So a nice little run there. So perhaps Arsenal attack outside of Bukayo Saka, I think, is an important premium player to own regardless of fixtures. I think maybe worth waiting until the fixtures get a little bit easier for Arsenal. Next up, I'm definitely considering Chris Wood at Nottingham Forest and Muniz at Fulham. So if we look at the fixtures for both of those, first of all, Wood already off the mark with a goal for Forest in game week one. And if we look at his fixtures, they look really good. Forest have Southampton this week. Then they've got Wolves. Tricky game against Liverpool in game week four. But after that, Brighton, Fulham, then Chelsea, Palace and Leicester. So a pretty decent run of fixtures for Nottingham Forest. Then if we compare that with Muniz, the fixtures in the short term look really promising. They've got Leicester this week, then Ipswich, so two relegated sides in a row for Fulham, who I do think were pretty competitive throughout the game against Manchester United on Friday night. Then after Leicester and Ipswich, they've got West Ham, Newcastle, and then Forest, Man City, Aston Villa. So the games get a little trickier in the long term for Fulham. But in the short term, Muniz could be a good option at 6 million as a replacement for Dominic Solanke. The only other player who might be worth considering, and it's going to be very difficult to afford him unless you're prepared to take a hit, I would imagine, which I certainly wouldn't recommend this early in the season, is Ollie Watkins. 9 million is his price tag. And the thing that's really putting me off recommending Ollie Watkins this week is Aston Villa are facing Arsenal. And that is statistically the best defence in the league. So it's not a great time to buy a striker who is trying to score against them. So that being said, the fixtures are much, much better after game week two. They've got Aston Villa have got Leicester, Everton, Wolves and Ipswich as the next four after that. So a really nice run of fixtures for Ollie Watkins. Perhaps if you can afford it, then Watkins could be the move for game week three onwards. Now, moving on to defensive transfers, because there are a couple of issues for many managers that might need addressing. Barco is certainly one of them. That loan move to Seville means that us owners need to find a replacement. Now, I unfortunately am in the tricky position of being both a Solanke and Barco owner. I would be prioritising Solanke's replacement over Barco's. In fact, I would say the same if I was also a Quonsa owner. I think Solanke is the most pressing issue that should be resolved for any owners of him. But let's first take a look at the 4 million defensive options, because there aren't really too many of them. But whilst Barco is still 4 million, if you've got nothing left in the bank, then really your options are fairly similar to how they were at the beginning of the season. So couple of 4 million Leicester defenders, Vestergaard and Fass, both 4 million there. Harwood Bellis at Southampton, he's also 4 million. The new boy from Liverpool who's just joined Brentford, he's also 4 million. Van der Berg. And also an emerging option is Jacob Greaves at Ipswich, who I actually thought had quite an impressive performance at centre-back against Liverpool, albeit a 2-0 defeat in the end. But he did show a little bit of an aerial threat with a couple of decent headers. And he did look like a pretty good centre-back for them. So he could be a nice 4 million fifth choice defensive option for our teams to replace Barco. If you've got the luxury of half a million or so in the bank, or you're looking to replace Quonsa, then you're looking at 4.5 mil defenders. Now, if you have already replaced Quonsa and you did it before the price drop, then well done. Because if you didn't have any money in the bank, then your 4.5 became 4.4, which meant that you would have had to have shopped in the 4 million price bracket and picked one of the players that I've just mentioned. But there are plenty of 4.5s that are viable options. So we've got someone like Mazraoui, who's recently just joined Manchester United and gone straight in to the starting 11 alongside Martinez. So it'll be interesting to see if he becomes a very popular option. 80 minutes he got in the 1-0 victory over Fulham. Then we've also got Rico Lewis at Manchester City. Now, he started that game against Chelsea, played very, very well. However, Kyle Walker will be back soon. And I think that Rico Lewis is very much a very short-term option. I'm certainly speaking from experience. I'm certainly actually speaking from experience with this one. I've bought Rico Lewis on two separate occasions in two previous seasons when Kyle Walker has been absent. And he's played really well for one game and then he hasn't been played again. So I would say approach Lewis with caution. Approach any Manchester City Pep-managed defender because he does like to rotate in that area from time to time. So just be mindful of that if you're considering Rico Lewis. Again, another potentially short-term option, but maybe the minutes are secure for at least the next three game weeks, and that's Dan Burn, who will almost certainly be playing centre-half for the next three matches for Newcastle after Cher picked up his straight red card. Outside of that, we've also got Lewis Hall at Newcastle, who I think is a really, really good option as well. And then the most popular option that I'm seeing is Robinson at Fulham. Now, the main reason he's been so popular, I think, is Fulham's fixtures. Those two promoted sides in game weeks 2 and 3, Ipswich and Leicester and Ipswich, mean that Anthony Robinson is a very, very appealing choice to come in and replace your fifth choice defender who isn't playing. That being said, there have been a few little murmurs that Manchester United might be interested in signing Robinson, probably down to the fact that they can't keep Luke Shaw fit. So maybe worth just holding off until we see the end of the transfer window before signing Robinson now, because if he is signed by them, there's no guarantee that he goes straight in starts week in, week out for Manchester United. And we don't want to sign a player now and then suddenly find out in a couple of weeks' time that they're not guaranteed 90 minutes. So maybe one to just monitor for now. Right then, that is it for this episode. Just before I go, I will run through my likely team ahead of game week 2. So I can tell you that at the moment, I haven't made a transfer, but I will be replacing Dominic Solanke. So at the moment, my team is Henderson in goal, who has West Ham at home this week. A back three of Vardiol, Pedro Porro and Lewis Hall. I was momentarily concerned that Pedro Porro might not be fit after he seemed to pick up a bit of a knock and tried to play through it towards the end of that draw against Leicester. But we have had confirmation since then that he's fit and okay to play. A midfield four, I've got same as before. My midfield four at the moment is Bukayo Saka away at Villa, Gordon away at Bournemouth, Diogo Jota at home to Brentford, and I'm switching out Hudson-Odoi for Forrest, who is away at Southampton, and bringing in Emile Smith-Rowe at home against Leicester. I felt like Southampton were marginally better than Leicester, so I think that Smith-Rowe has the slightly kinder fixture and it being at home as well. That's why I've gone with Fulham man over the Forest man. Up front, a three consisting of Haaland, who at the moment I've got the captain's armband, and we'll come to whether or not that becomes a triple captain or not in a minute. Isak away at Bournemouth. And now I need a decision to be made as to whether or not I go with either Wood or Muniz to replace Dominic Solanke. At the moment, I'm leaning towards Muniz, and that is simply because of the short-term fixtures. They just look so good. I know that Hudson-Odoi could be someone who I regret benching with that game against Southampton away, so maybe I cover myself by getting Chris Wood. And then I've got an attack from both Fulham in Smith Rowe and Forest in Chris Wood. And the more I talk that out loud, the more I'm starting to be convinced that maybe Wood is the better pick in comparison to Muniz. My only concern would be the competition for minutes between him and Awoniyi. So still some decisions to be made. It'll be one of Wood or Muniz, I think. But yeah, not made that decision yet. In terms of captaincy, there are a couple of interesting candidates that might be worth considering, but none of them really compare to Erling Haaland this week, who statistically is head and shoulders above any other candidate for captain this week. Manchester City at home against Ipswich. And I think for that reason, we're seeing quite a few people even tempted to play their triple captain chip as early as game week two. So I can see why people would be tempted. The hesitancy that I have really stems from the fact that I know there will be at least a couple of double game weeks later on in the season. And I always really do like having a triple captain have two bites at the cherry. A double game week just feels slightly more comforting when you've got that triple captain chip active. So I won't be playing the triple captain chip this week, but fair enough, if you want to go for it, it's a great fixture to do it. In terms of some different captaincy shouts, I think the closest competitor to Haaland for the armband would be Mo Salah, if you have him in your side. If you don't, then I suppose Diogo Jota would also be quite a tempting differential captaincy pick. Outside of that, I'm not too sure about any others that are particularly convincing. Maybe Isak away at Bournemouth. I also think that Dominic Solanke would have been a fantastic candidate had he not been injured at home to Everton. Maybe Son is a decent alternative differential to captaincy for game week two. That being said, his performance against Leicester wasn't the most convincing, so it's certainly not a move that I would be recommending, shall we say. I think for most people, if you've got Haaland, you captain him. If you haven't got Haaland, you've got Salah, you captain him. Outside of that, I like Jota or Isak the most. Right then, that is it for this episode. A reminder once again that the deadline is Saturday, the 24th of August at 11 o'clock in the morning UK time. That is 90 minutes before the first kickoff of game week two, and that is Brighton versus Manchester United. Thank you very much for listening to One Stop FPL. My name is Andy Johnson. You can find me on X at One Stop FPL. Best of luck to everyone ahead of game week two, and I hope you all get your first green arrows of the season. Thanks once again, and I'll talk to you again soon.